Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us this week is New York State Assembly Minority Leader Brian Kolb, a frequent guest here on the Capital Connection. Kolb is a Republican who represents New York's 31st District, which includes all of Ontario and parts of Seneca County. Well, Brian Kolb, again, thanks as always for sharing your time with us and being here in the studio. I appreciate it.
My pleasure, Alan.
Okay, so you're in the minority. You're in the minority. We know why, because in this great democratic state, capital D, small d, of New York, we allow politicians who are in the majority party in their own house to draw their own districts. That's terrible. I mean, how do we send kids to fight for democracy in foreign countries? Well, in fact, we say to the Republicans in the Senate and to the Democrats in the House, draw your own districts where you can't lose. It seems like something has to be done about that, doesn't it?
Well, of course, sir. Something needs to be done. Now, we've created a quote-unquote independent redistricting commission for the next cycle being of our census in, another 8 years from now.
We all may be dead.
And Lord only knows who's going to be on that commission. But certainly, at least it's a step to try to get the direct hands of the majorities out of controlling all their lines.
But you know, Brian Kolb, when these guys start doing the first step is never a big enough step. At what point do they wake up and say, you know, we could have done something great here and really put a nice... But people in a recent poll said, we don't like any of them. We want to kick them all out. You want to start again. It's like when you were in art class and you didn't like the picture you were drawing and you covered the whole thing with black crayon. We want to start the whole thing. I mean, this is a crisis in confidence for the state legislature.
Oh, there's no doubt about that. The public opinion of state government here is terrible. It's in the tank. You know, there's other adjectives I would use, but we're... on air here.
On the radio here.
It's just terrible. And certainly I think that when we, and I know we're going to talk about this, about even trying to send messages back to the public that things are really going to start to be different, like on the pension forfeiture bill, we fail to act. And we need to be at the forefront of radical change on how state governments operated. And I don't care what's happened the last 50 years. It's the next 50 that we got to do something about.
I love it when the Republican minority leader uses the word radical. radical. I think that's great. Okay, so let's talk about the pension thing. It's a very small step. Most New Yorkers think if a legislator or a public official is caught doing something bad, they ought to have their pension taken away. And they agreed to that in the budget process negotiations, right?
That's correct.
But now... it's like Pharaoh in Egypt. He said to the Jewish people as they were crossing, no, you can't go. Every time there would be another reason you couldn't go until he had to suffer the ultimate consequences. So now they're saying what? They're saying, no, we're not going to adhere to our agreement. Can you fill us all in on that?
Certainly. At the end of March, as part of the budget negotiations, the governor and the two majorities came to an agreement not only on the budget but on a pension forfeiture bill. Dealing with not only elected officials, but any public officials that is currently on, the taxpayer-funded payroll for crimes. If they're convicted of a felony and removed from their office, then they would not be eligible, except at the court's discretion for their families, on receiving a pension. And so that was the agreed-upon bill. At the 11th hour on March 31st, the Assembly Democrats pulled that bill off the floor, and we did not vote on it. The Senate passed it. And then they go dark from April 1st to Tuesday of this week. And all of a sudden, the Assembly Democrats introduce another pension forfeiture bill that's not the same as what was already agreed upon and already negotiated. And I think that they're doing this to muddy the water, to sabotage the process, because I do not believe that they're going to get a agreed-upon bill with the governor and the Senate between now and next Wednesday at the end of session.
So, Brian Cole, what did the old one say and what did the new one say?
Well, the old one said that any public official that's convicted and removed from office would have their pension stripped. What the Democrats did with their light version is narrow the field. They took out, for instance, any state agency employee. You know, basically, if you were a union member, a public employee union member, unless you're an elected official, now it doesn't apply to you versus the original bill. It did. And we had a story in Rensselaer County where there was a billing clerk that stole $200,000, and but she's still getting her state pension. And so the original bill would say, nope, she's not going to get that pension because she's been convicted of a crime while she was conducting her duties of her office. So they're narrowing the field, and I strongly believe the original bill was much better because it's about any taxpayer-funded job that if you break the law, you're convicted, and you're out of office or out of your position, you should not be eligible for a taxpayer-funded pension.
So how do you answer the question about the wives and children of these guys?
There is a provision in the legislation, actually is in the language, that basically leaves it to the discretion of the courts to obviously evaluate those circumstantials or circumstances with the family and the original bill as well as the new bill.
Speaker Hastie himself is under some microscope right now, which of course we knew was going to happen, and he has been charging the state. This is the new Democratic speaker who took Sheldon Silver's place, has been charging the state for fixing his car out of his campaign funds. But he also takes mileage on his car, on that very car. And he says that, you know, he fixes the car out of that campaign money. But when you take mileage, it is supposed to include fixing your car, right?
That's the way it's supposed to work, yes.
Well, is that all you're going to say?
No. Well, what I would always say is that if there is breaking of the law or campaign violations, there are investigative bodies that will pursue those leads if that is indeed the case. So it's up to them to decide whether there has been any mischievous workings of using campaign funds or even the claiming of travel reimbursement if you weren't eligible for that. And we had that with Bill Scarborough, but, you know, they did a separate investigation. So my comment is I don't know if anybody is investigating the speaker. I'm just saying that there's certainly the mechanism set up and a reporting mechanism, so it's fairly easy to determine if there's questions to be pursued. And I would like to say I'm confident that if there are things that any of us would do wrong, that there are checks and balances in place to pursue that.
Brian Cole, what's interesting about what you've just said is that I know, we all know, on the inside, we all know that if you're the minority leader, you're dependent upon the speaker to give you another desk, another secretary. You don't get that stuff automatically. So you really have to watch your words, right, with when you talk about the speaker. But I find it infuriating that people are double charged, both for the mileage, if this is true, and using campaign money, of all things, for personal reasons.
And that's but I think you said the key phrase there, Alan, if it's true, was there really a law violation? And I don't know that. Obviously, I think if anybody is really breaking the law, it should be pursued to the fullest extent. But I don't have the facts. I haven't seen the filings. It would be wrong for me to prejudge that he's done something wrong without actually having proof that he's done something wrong.
Okay, now at least one columnist who I don't really respect has said that there's paranoia in Governor Cuomo's office, that he can't really effectively negotiate the big ugly, the legislative compromise on big bills. What are the ones you're keeping your eyes on?
Well, I think there's a variety of different pieces of legislation are under negotiation. Property tax cap, whether extended or not, permanently.
Okay, let's start with that. Are you for it?
I am.
Okay, and has it worked?
Yes, it has worked. One caveat.
Yes.
The only thing that state government has not done is reduce the actual cost drivers, which is mandate relief. And when the property tax cap was first done, and yep, I was an advocate of the whole premise in talking to school districts and municipalities throughout the state, is that we were going to reduce that cost burden to them so living under a tax cap growth would be a heck of a lot easier if Albany or even the federal government wasn't telling these people that you have to do these things and you have to pay for it. So if we're telling them they got to do things, they have to pay for it, and then we tie their hands by a tax cap, that's not fair either. And I think that's why we haven't done enough to deal with Medicaid reform, other things that the counties have to pick up in terms of the costs that are dictated by the state.
Well, Medicaid reform, of course, is huge.
Huge.
Besides Medicaid reform, give me another example of a mandate that is onerous to you.
Well, any mandate is onerous if it costs money. And there's literally, Alan, hundreds of them. And Medicaid's the largest because that's big bucks. That's billions of dollars.
It's huge.
But if you talk to a county
legislator. So what should happen? Just let me interrupt you for a second. Sure. What should happen with Medicaid? Should the state pick up the county's part of that?
Yes, there's a cap. Right, we've put in a ceiling. 2 years from now that'll be the highest that the counties will ever have to pay. What I'm saying is, if you really want to reduce property taxes, sure, because 60% of a county tax bill is Medicaid.
That's unbelievable.
This is a program that the state has designed. Relieve the counties of these costs more and more each year. You can't do it overnight, but that's where you'll get real cost relief.
Okay. What about the argument that schools are suffering because of the tax cap so that they can't raise enough money to really run their schools properly?
Well, I was on school board, mm-hmm, and what the average person doesn't realize is that 80% of a school budget is personnel related, and that's the teachers, their health care, their pensions. And those are very difficult to reduce cost of based on the negotiating rules that have been set up with Taylor Law, et cetera. So the costs never go down. They only go up. So a school board is limited to what they can do in terms of controlling their costs. And so the real incidentals that they tend to cut are athletic programs, arts, band, all of the types of cultural things that really helps round out an educational piece. But those aren't the big dollars of a budget. It's the regular teaching profession and all the costs associated.
Okay, so what's the fix?
Well, obviously, first and foremost, is there a way to level the playing field in terms of negotiations?
Well, there are those people listening say, wait a second, we got a governor here who has now become quite infamous for a fight he has picked with the teachers in terms of evaluating them, in terms of making it easier to fire them, doing all of those things. And do I hear Brian Kolb saying, I agree with the governor?
Oh, absolutely not, for sure. I think that the governor's attack on the teaching profession is wrong-minded. I would go without saying anything we do in government can always be improved. Anything we do in terms of delivering services, whether it's teachers or firefighters or police officers or any of us, legislators, we can always do a better job. However, to hold hostage operating aid for school districts because you have a vendetta against a particular group is just wrong, and I think it's not the right tact that should be employed. If you want to have a discussion about teacher evaluations and performance, okay, fine. We'll have that. But you do that through sitting down and talking to people, not creating legislation that basically says, you know, I'm going to harm you in every way possible just to show you that I'm boss. I think that's absolutely been the wrong-headed approach. We haven't fixed Common Core. We're trying to evaluate teachers with implementing a new curriculum that has not been well thought. Is, in fact, more and more states across the country are opting out of Common Core because of the disaster it's been. We've said, our conference has said, we need to put a moratorium on it. We've held forums. We've come up with specific suggestions. Those are proactive steps that doesn't attack anything. It's just trying to attack the problem. And what the governor is trying to convince everybody that the teachers are the problem here, and I'm saying, no, we're all in this together, including the Board of Regents, who I think is a disaster, has been a disaster. The education.
You say that only because in the end, the speaker gets to pick the members of the Board of Regents, right?
Oh, absolutely not. If you really want honest opinions, yeah, talk to people about the Board of Regents and education standards that are monitored in Albany. They're clueless. They've lost touch of reality. And so it doesn't mean there aren't good people that serve on the Board of Regents, but they get to pick the education commissioner. And so all he has to worry about is keeping them happy versus keeping the legislature happy or the public at large, and that's why John King had it such a hard time, was when he went around and
former education
commissioner. When he went around and told everybody how smart he was and how wrong they were, I think that was the wrong approach.
Brian Cove, the minority leader of the New York State Assembly, in other words, the head Republican. There is a culture that we keep hearing about as I started this last question, with paranoia that Preet Bharara is not through with the legislature or the governor yet. What are you hearing?
Actually, the same thing that you're hearing, that he's not done, there's more to follow.
He said stay tuned.
Stay tuned. He's got all these files from the Moreland Commission that was shut down. You know, there's been obviously rumors swirling that because of what the governor did to shut down Moreland Commission and the reasons he did it, that a deal was cut. I don't know if any of that's true. I think that's what all has to be evaluated by Mr. Bharara and see what happens.
Should Cuomo have not closed down that Moreland Commission?
I don't think he should have. Not when they were full-fledged into all the files and investigations, and they should have been able to pursue the leads, because that was the purpose of it. Now, Governor Cuomo says, well, it's my commission. I can do anything I want with it. Well, not once you're doing an investigative body that's actually trying to deal with a serious corruption problem in state government. I thought that it was very poorly timed and a very bad decision to disband it.
Well, me too. But not only that, but there was another part of what you just said. The governor said, it's my commission. It wasn't only his commission. He had the attorney general of the state deputize the members of the commission so that they could get into the legislature. They could look at the legislature. Otherwise, it would have only had been executive branch. Well, what happened to him? What happened to Schneiderman, who appointed all of those people along with Cuomo?
Well, I think a lot of people are asking that question. They still haven't been able to get the answer from the attorney general.
Well, as we speak, all of America is talking about the escape from the Clinton Correctional Facility, otherwise known as Dannemora, to many of us. We are told that that prison was built literally before the Civil War. Is it time to look at the facilities around the state, the prisons we have?
Well, I think that there should be an overview of all of our prisons, new or old, in terms of our security protocols. And, you know, it fascinates me, even with all of the safeguards, that drugs still find their way inside the prison walls.
Unbelievable.
I just am fascinated by the fact that that can even occur. And I'm not blaming our correction officers at all. It's just fascinating at how creative people are about getting things in, especially with, you know, jail cells and locks and keys and everything else. I've visited our prisons, or not every single one of them, but even just getting in the front door as a visitor is
tough.
So I say, and I went and saw the package room. They actually have x-ray inspection of all the packages that come in, and they do find stuff, but they said everything that they find today, somebody else finds a creative way to get around it. It's just fascinating, the criminal mind and how it works. It's almost, you want to give them a compliment, but you don't want to, because what they're doing is wrong.
So what lessons do we learn out of this escape?
Well, I think, you know, we're going to have to wait and see all the details that they uncover through the investigation. Obviously, everybody assumes they had to have inside help.
Yeah.
But was it one person? Was it three person? Whatever it was. And how did they access tools? I mean, they had to have tools to make those cuts and blueprints to find their way out of it. Somebody's going to be in really big trouble when they can finish conducting their investigation, or somebody's, because I really think that we have very, very good folks that work in law enforcement, and they'll get to the bottom of it, and the people that were responsible for helping make this escape happen, I think will be in, obviously, significant trouble, and I'm sure will go to jail as a result of it.
One always wonders, what could they have been thinking? You know, you help somebody escape from prison, two heinous murderers, and what you think, if it's a boyfriend or if it's something like that, that somehow you're not going to be discovered when all the pieces are put together? One really wonders who in hell would think that.
Well, you know, you can almost apply that question that you just had, what were they thinking, to almost every dumb move that anybody has ever made in the human race.
Sure.
Is what were they thinking to think that they could get away with it? Why they would do this particular act, knowing full well that they're convicted murderers and they're not very good people. It makes you just pause and say, you know, they weren't thinking.
Well, you know, I mean, I look at the state legislature, I look at legislators who make some of the same old mistakes. They take cash out of their campaign funds that they shouldn't be taking. They do something with a young intern or a young person who's working for them, and they get caught. They don't get caught all the time, I'm sure, but they get caught. And you say, what could they have been thinking? What's the deal?
Well, you wonder those questions, you know, even using when going on the internet, or people sending text messages or even emails that are inappropriate. You shouldn't be doing those things. And you've seen people get caught and prosecuted for losing their office, like Anthony Weiner did. And yet people still go ahead and do it. It's just
who would take a picture of their junk and send it out over the. I mean, that's just it's unbelievable to me. Let's talk about, you have said, and I'm very interested in this because I certainly think there's some prima facie reason for thinking you're absolutely right. There's a group, there's a program called Startup New York. Mm-hmm. First of all, in a sentence or two, could you tell us what Startup New York is? And number two, tell us why you think it should be shut down.
Well, the short version is Startup New York was created as to try to create an incentive for businesses to locate to New York State and expand in New York State with providing tax incentives. And that's basically, in essence, for no taxes for 10 years. And what the thought process was that would provide a real incentive for people to want to come back to New York or relocate to New York. And then, having said that, now the governor and his administration went out, has spent millions of dollars advertising a program. Total number of jobs created, I think, right now are less than 100 statewide. And obviously, people still have the impression that New York's not open for business, regardless of the fancy TV ads. And, you know, I have said this to some of the folks of the governor's administration, you know, because I wrote an article about, hey, I think we should close this thing down. It's really not getting the return on investment that that taxpayers are making. And they said, well, it's going to take us a while to change the image of New York State. I said, you can have all the TV advertising in the whole world, but what happens when a business has to run their business in New York State, and they run into DEC, Department of Labor, you name it, any state agency that gives them a hard time, tax and finance. You know, I had a constituent that underpaid their sales tax by $25. $25. Well, $25 are going to pay. The tax and finance comes along and says, but now we're going to fine you $550 for underpaying it by $25. Does that make any sense? That's New York not open for business. The Minority Women Business Enterprise Program. Our application takes somewhere between 9 to 10 months, pages upon pages of application forms that they have to fill out to see if they qualify. Right across the border in New Jersey, 2 pages, you get your answer in 2.5 weeks. Which one of those sounds like they're more open for business? And that's, there are hundreds of examples where our state agencies are not customer service focused, and it's a mindset. And so you can, on one hand, say, well, we're going to just reduce your tax burden, and then you want to say to all those businesses that have been around here for 100 years that have paid taxes for all those years, they get squat.
Okay, you're a top Republican, Brian Colvin. We only have 2 minutes left. So let me ask you a political question. Assuming Andrew Cuomo runs for a third term, his numbers are going way down, but assuming he runs for a third term, who you got?
Well, I think there's at least two candidates right now that have said they're interested, Rob Astorino.
Who lost disastrously the last time.
Well, there's a lot of different opinions about that. He lost by New York City, period. He carried 42 out of 62 counties.
He did.
And I think Rob's a good man and a good candidate, and I could support him in another run. Chris Gibson, although I have not had any direct conversations with Chris myself.
He's a congressman from Columbia County, extremely popular in his district. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think that those are two guys to start with that I think would be very good choices.
Okay, can the party stand behind them and raise some money for them?
We better.
Yeah.
And we should.
We're out of time. Our guest has been New York State Assembly Minority Leader Brian Kolb. Brian Kolb, we are incredibly grateful that you take the time to talk to us and you come here. And thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me in.
The Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.